when you look at what's happened here, Barack Obama and Joe Biden were in the room with the FBI director and the CIA director and the National Security Advisor when they came up with what can only be called a plot to try to tag Donald Trump with non-existent Russian collusion, which to this day, we now know indisputably never actually happened. That's the greatest single dirty trick in American political history. That makes Watergate look like small potatoes. To this day, it's pretty clear that nobody is going to be held responsible for it. There'll be no consequences for those who broke the law in an effort to get Donald Trump simply because they couldn't beat him in the ballot box.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, this is it. This is going to drive you into the weekend. It's been busy. State of the Union, Super Tuesday. What a great conversation. Longtime Trump confidant Roger Stone is here with us. He's the host of the Stone Zone show every night, a best-selling author. You can find him all over social media. Go check out his books. What a great person to tell us he is about Donald Trump and all things Trump. Before we get to that conversation with Roger Stone, though, I want to tell you about two amazing sponsors that make this show possible. Let's hear from them before we get into a great conversation with Roger Stone. All right, guys, longtime watchers of the show know about my friend Leo Grillo. He founded Delta Rescue. You can check out the work at deltarescue.org. Leo rescued a Doberman. He named the Doberman Delta. That stands for dedication and everlasting love to animals. That became the beginning of what is now Delta Rescue. Delta Rescue is a no-kill sanctuary that for life, not for short terms, it's not a shelter, it is a no-kill sanctuary for life. They take care of malnutrition dogs, horses, cats that need veterinary care, support. They let them roam free. And if you go to deltarescue.org, you can check out all of those facilities, the work that they do, some of the great videos that show you the interaction that they have with them and the support that they give these animals. But it doesn't happen. Leo's mission, in order to be fulfilled, needs people like you and I to contribute $5, $10, $100, $1,000. If you go to deltarescue.org, you can check out the videos, but you can also donate. More to the point, if you really are an animal lover like I am and want to make this an enduring mission, check out the estate planning kit that Leo has on there and see if you can make Delta Rescue part of your life's estate. All right, folks, during these uncertain times, if you're looking to secure your financial future, call my friends at Bishop Gold. Call 844-984-1616 or go to bishopgoldgroup.com/Sean. I did it. This is where you want to add precious metals to your investment strategy. So if you have an old 401k, an IRA, or just want to enhance and expand your investments, precious metals is the way to go. I called them. I had a discussion with them about my needs, where I was, what my long-term goals were, and they put a plan together for me. Now, you can keep the metals. They can keep them for you. They'll tell you how to liquidate them if you want to do that at some point down the road. But the bottom line is this. These are the people that I trust. I know there's a ton of commercials out there about precious metals and getting involved in gold and silver. Bishop Golds are the people that I talk to, that I trust for my own investments. I know them. I trust them. They've got the experience. They live by integrity. Call them at 1-844-984-1616 or go to bishopgoldgroup.com/Sean to begin your journey with financial metals and get a free gift if you do that. So go to bishopgoldgroup.com/Sean to talk to my friends at Bishop Gold Group. Roger Stone, what a week to talk to you. We have pivoted to the general election. You have been a top strategist for countless candidates for office. Right now, just lay out for the audience what you think the Trump strategy should be, because we're entering the earliest general election that we have in, my God, decades. So does that change how he should address the coming months, when he should roll things out, or should he just basically be the same guy he's always been?
Well, first of all, I think it's I thank you for having me, and also mention that a historical footnote, Donald Trump now becomes only the second person in the history of the Republican Party to be nominated for president three times, the previous record holder being one Richard M. Nixon. And strangely enough, for the same reason, it was widely believed, and I wrote two books on this, that the 1960 election had been stolen from Nixon. Anyway, like Nixon, and like, say, Grover Cleveland, a Democrat, I think Trump's on the cusp of making one of the greatest political comebacks of all time. Now, as you know, since you worked very closely with him, he's not handled, he's not managed, he's not scripted. I mean, what you see is what you get. He makes his own decisions. That's not to say, as you know, that he's not interested in advice. He's not interested in input. He most certainly is. He works the phone very aggressively to a wide variety of friends and advisors, but in the end, only one person makes that decision. A couple things are clear about the dynamic, though, and that is we actually have potentially a complete political realignment at hand. We are seeing, for the first time ever, with the leadership of Donald Trump, the potential to make huge inroads among voter groups that were traditionally, habitually Democratic. So among African Americans, among Hispanic Americans, among Asian Americans, particularly among younger Americans, he appears in the early polling to already be hitting historic marks, and the campaign really has not yet even begun in earnest. So I think to sit here and say, well, here's a plan, there's no point in making a plan. The word plan and Donald Trump, as you know, don't really go in the same sentence. But I think he's going to take the fight right to Biden. And the theme of this is very simple. Compare the impact of the Trump policies over 4 years with the impact of the Biden policies. And it doesn't matter in what area, whether it's gasoline prices, or whether it's the rate of inflation, whether it's the safety of our neighborhoods, whether it is our porous southern border, because as you know, illegal border crossings under Donald Trump had trickled to almost nothing. And now we've had an implosion, an invasion in our border. So it doesn't really matter what area you want to look at. We were much better off 3+ years ago. And that's the comparison I think voters are taking away from this rematch.
Yeah, I'm glad you said that. That's 100. I mean, this is for the first time in 100 years, an easy contrast. It's not hypothetical. It's not promises. Here's what I did. Here's what he's doing to you. And it's plain and simple to your point, no matter how far down you go the list. You want to stay domestically? I'll talk energy and taxes and the southern border. You want to talk foreign policy? I'll talk to you about Russia and China and Israel and Iran. Trump wins in every case. So that leads me to the second question. I get this probably, it's in the top three questions. And I want to hear how you're going to answer this because I have my way, but I am very intrigued by your answer. Time and time again, voters will come up to me and say, Sean, I love everything about the Trump policies. I loved all of the aforementioned things that we just mentioned. If he just wasn't so personal in the attacks, I don't want to pre-shadow my, I want you to answer that because I don't want to, I'd rather get your take than tell you how I answer that.
Well, look, I think that I had a woman that worked for me for a number of years typing, and she was very good, and I paid her an hourly wage. And of course, a lot of the stuff that I was dictating was pro-Trump material. For some reason, I can't work with a dictating machine or a computer. And then one day she said to me, you know, by the way, my husband and I are voting against Trump. I said, really? You can vote for anyone you want, of course, but why would you say that? And they said, well, he's so rude. He's so brash. He's so crass. His attacks on people are so vulgar. I said, let me ask you a question. Your husband's a carpenter. How's business? Oh, business is unbelievable. We had to hire 3 more guys to handle all of the incoming business we had. I said, and how was business for your husband's company when Barack Obama was president? She said, well, we were living hand to mouth. We were living month to month. And I said, so can you not put aside your personal distaste for him to realize that his policies have really benefited you and your family and therefore the country? So those who don't like him, and there are some, I would suggest to them that they vote their own pocketbook, that they vote their own best interest. Is he going to change? No. Is he going to stop posting on social media? We both know that's never going to happen. On the other hand, I must say, I saw him the other night. I saw him on Super Tuesday, and he's more relaxed than I have ever seen him. He is very confident. He's very resolute. He's very determined. If I were him, I'd be angrier. He was not angry. I haven't seen any anger from him. Given what they're trying to do to him, given the fact that he's facing 91 fabricated charges, and that they're attempting to theoretically at least send him to prison for 600, maybe it's 700 years, and that no former president has been treated like this, and nor has he in fact done anything wrong, I would expect him to be angrier, but he's not angry. He's resolved. He is determined. And no, he's not out for revenge, other than to say that his success will be his revenge.
Yeah. First of all, I answer the question almost identically to you. I mean, my point to people is, does a tweet hurt you? I mean, no. Do policies help you? Yes. Are you safer? Were you stronger? Were you more economically viable? And they go, yeah. And I go, okay. And what about now? Well, I go, so you would rather have someone that talks nice to you but screws you over, which is kind of what we've seen with both Obama's policies and Biden's, than have someone say some things that you don't agree with but much better off in terms of your safety and your economic. Anyway, let me ask you a question. You brought that up about them going after him. And I say this as you can't read a bio on Roger Stone without hearing, and I don't know how many of them are true versus made up versus whatever, of dirty tricks in campaigns. Put that aside for a second, and just when you look at what they're doing to Trump financially, trying to take him off the ballot, coming after him criminally, could you have imagined? I mean, this is taking dirty tricks to a level that is, I couldn't have imagined this 4 years ago.
Well, first of all, you always see this as Roger Stone, self-described dirty trickster. Sean, I've never.
Well, that's why I wanted you to say, because
I've never described myself that way. And yes, I played hardball politics and I did anything necessary to elect my candidates short of breaking the law. Key point. But when you look at what's happened here, which is nothing less than an abuse of power in which the full authority of the U.S. government and the extraordinary capabilities of our intelligence agencies were used, utilizing what they knew was fabricated evidence, the so-called Steele dossier, to mount a completely illegal and illicit government-operated coup d'etat against a sitting president. That's the greatest single dirty trick in American political history. That makes Watergate look like small potatoes. Watergate was private citizens who were misguided, who sought to break into the Democratic National Committee headquarters for reasons we even today still can't figure out, because their candidate was leading in 49 states and he was on the verge of the greatest landslide in history. So the purposes of that are still a mystery to all of us, but it wasn't a government operation. There was no abuse of public power, and those who were involved went to prison. In this case, this is an abuse of power that goes all the way to the White House. Barack Obama and Joe Biden were in the room with the FBI director and the CIA director and the National Security Advisor when they came up with what can only be called a plot to try to tag Donald Trump with non-existent Russian collusion, which to this day, we now know indisputably never actually happened. So I would never have thought in the 45 years I've been in American politics that our criminal justice system would be weaponized this way. On the other hand, I've lived it. They charged me with lying under oath to Congress in my voluntary testimony. And while it's true I made misstatements, none of them were material. There was no underlying crime to hide. I had no motive to lie. I made honest mistakes, but they were completely innocuous. There was no Russian collusion. There was no WikiLeaks collaboration. There was nothing to hide. So perhaps I was just a test case. Look, the real reason they came after me was to pressure me to testify falsely against Donald Trump. We're right back into where we started, which is to say the greatest single dirty trick in American politics, and one that to this day, it's pretty clear that nobody is going to be held responsible for. There'll be no consequences for those who broke the law in an effort to get Donald Trump, simply because they couldn't beat him in the ballot box.
You know, I always tell people, you have no idea, like the Mueller probe, which you just mentioned there, I was not a target, but yet I had to hire lawyers who went through countless pages of notes and emails, charging thousands of dollars an hour to sit there for, I don't know what it was, 8, 9, 10 hours, something like that. The impact that that has, and that was the thing, it was, we are going to squeeze you all. We're going to hit you financially. I've explained to people, when you get called up to Congress, and you've mentioned the testimony that you gave, there's lawyers, they all get paid, they've got expenses, they've got paralegals, there's copying expenses, all this stuff. The impact that that has, and you're right, I mean, they're going after you to say, okay, let's figure out when you'll say mother. Just, we're going to squeeze you, we're going to squeeze you, we're going to squeeze you. What impact did that have on you? I mean, someone who's been in the game, as you mentioned, for 40 plus years, you're thinking to yourself, I play hard. I make no excuses about that, but I've never seen the government come. I mean, they were literally about to put you in jail. Walk me through what that was like personally for you to say, you've got to be kidding me.
Well, first of all, I knew there was no Russian collusion. I knew I hadn't colluded with any Russians. I knew that they had sent a Russian to come see me, but he turned out to be an FBI informant, and it was a setup. By the way, I sent him packing. I wasn't interested in whatever it was he was trying to sell me, allegedly dirt on Hillary Clinton. The whole meeting lasted 2 minutes, and then we found out he was an FBI informant, and he'd been authorized by the Miami office of the FBI to even be in the country. The morning of January 25th, 2019, when at 6 o'clock in the morning, 29 heavily armed FBI agents brandishing fully automatic M4 assault weapons surrounded my home to arrest me for the first time nonviolent crime of allegedly lying to Congress was pretty shocking. By the way, Sean, the special counsel's office had talked to my lawyers the very day before. We turned over 35 pages of text messages, which actually proved that I was telling the truth, that I had received nothing of interest or of value from WikiLeaks and passed it on to no one, but they didn't care. So that was all orchestrated right along with the CNN cameras, 25.
But by the way, can you just elaborate? So it's 7 in the morning. And CNN just happens to be there, right? I mean, in Fort Lauderdale, where you, I mean, I was like, you've got, I mean, they coordinated this.
Well, in fact, we know that. Here's why. I was actually arrested at 6:06. At 6:11, a woman with CNN texted my lawyer a warrant for my arrest. But the warrant for my arrest was still sealed. It wasn't unsealed until 10:30 that morning. And the document she sent had no court stampings on it or timestamps. But when you looked at the metadata tags, you had the initials of the man who wrote it, Andrew Weissman, one of the Mueller prosecutors. Therefore, it is logical to see that it was he who illegally leaked my arrest and search warrants to CNN. CNN got an award, by the way. They claim that they just happened to be there on the basis of a hunch. No, they were there because they were tipped. And once again, the purpose was to intimidate me into giving false testimony against Donald Trump. I was arrested in January. By July, they were saying to me, look, through my lawyers, look, if you will simply say that these 26 cell phone calls between you and candidate Trump in 2016 pertain to Russia or WikiLeaks or whatever it was they wanted me to say, well, we'll tell the judge, we'll advise her not to give you any jail time. I refused that. I would not do that. Was not going to lie no matter what. Thank God the president answered my prayers, saw that I was a victim, that I had actually done nothing wrong. There is no Russian collusion or WikiLeaks collaboration to lie about. I was targeted to try to get at Donald Trump. He commuted my sentence. And then I got a full and complete and unconditional presidential pardon. But Sean, don't try to find that on the internet. It's exceedingly difficult to find, as if it didn't even happen.
You know, the last week or whatever it was, maybe a week and a half ago, Alan Weisselberg, the former CFO of the Trump Organization, turned himself in at 7 in the morning, and CNN had a camera in that court outside the courtroom. And I'm like, it's the same. It's just like with Roger Stone. The thing that's so interesting, by the way, you mentioned Andrew Weissman. Of course, he's now employed by CNN. The thing that's so interesting, though, we've talked about them going after Trump. But by going after people like you, and by going after all the people they did in the Mueller probe, and since then, I believe that it's an extension of going after Trump, which is the following. He's running for re-election. He's actually now the front runner. And I think everything that we've seen so far, there's no reason why he won't win big. I think what they're trying to do is intimidate the next wave of people that says, hey, don't go work for this guy. We'll bankrupt you. We'll put you in jail. We'll threaten you with jail. But God knows, we'll still rack up so many legal fees on you that you'll be in trouble. This is the next iteration. They're saying, well, okay, Trump's got money. He can defend himself. But the Roger Stones, the Sean Spicers, the Bob Smiths, and the Sammy so-and-sos, don't think twice about whether you want to work for this guy in the campaign or in government, because we're going to get you.
Sean, you're absolutely right. Look, my wife and I lost everything. We lost our home. We lost our savings. We lost most of our insurance. We lost my ability to travel. I lost my ability to speak. I'm the only person, I think, in the history of American jurisprudence who was gagged before my trial, during my trial, and then I remained gagged after my trial. So I was never afforded an opportunity to defend myself. Yet CNN, MSNBC, the usual suspects continue to rip me as a traitor to my country, as a Russian intelligence asset, which is nonsensical. But I never had a chance to tell my side of the story, which is why I'm so grateful for this opportunity to tell people what actually happened. But yeah, they target you, not because it has nothing to do with you. I'm not that important. It was about going after Donald Trump and doing anything necessary to try to bring him down. And right now, they're more apoplectic. They're even more hysterical because they can see that he's on the comeback trail. And I agree with you. I think there's a very high probability that he's going back to the White House, and they don't quite know what to do about it.
Well, I just hope when he gets back, because I say this with all due respect to the president, because it wasn't just him. I think when we walked in that first day, we assumed that there was a sense that, okay, he won. The voters have spoken. We're going to move the agenda forward. The resistance from so many of these people in government to leak on him. I mean, I remember, was it the first 24, 48 hours, the private conversations with both the Prime Minister of Australia and then the Prime Minister of Mexico, the President of Mexico, were leaked out in full, the full transcript. And I'm thinking to myself, there's only so many people that have access. This isn't a widely trafficked transcript. There's a phone call and the Situation Room types it up for posterity. And this thing's getting out. And I'm thinking to myself, what are we about to face? These people at the highest levels of government are going to take them out at the knees. And I hope that because he has seen the movie before now, can come in and say, nope, nope, nope. And I'm cutting these guys off and bringing in some new people, because that's the only way. I think the nice thing is he's going to get a jump on this day one, know exactly who he can trust, who he can't, what needs to get reformed.
Yeah, he's a much wiser Donald Trump today than he was when he first became president. It was not unreasonable to believe that, as had happened every other time in our history, that the nation would unite around the new president and that Republicans would work with Democrats to move the country forward. I think he never understood that a large segment of people within our own party were out to remove him just about the time he got elected. But I saw this just last week. There's a new report that CIA Director John Brennan had essentially coordinated with the intelligence agencies of five foreign countries, the English-speaking countries, in order to surveil and bump, yep, that means entrap, 26 individual supporters of President Donald Trump. And it turns out that the president ordered all the documents that prove this declassified before he left office, but none of them were declassified, right, because those in the deep state or those in the permanent bureaucracy feel that they can just ignore a presidential order and there are no consequences. So I agree with you. If he returns, as I believe he's going to, he absolutely must clean house at the intelligence agencies, certainly at the Justice Department, and he needs new people who are committed to the rule of law. They talk constantly about the rule of law while they go out and violate the Constitution and the law. Everything they say is backwards. Donald Trump is not a threat to democracy. Joe Biden and his thugs are a threat to our constitutional republic.
You know, it's interesting. You talk about your personal branding afterwards. And I, you know, once in a while I have to, I'll see something in print. I try not to take it personal about what's gets said about me. But I remind people once in a while, they'll say, I can't believe you're still with Trump. You can't do this and you can't do that. I talk about the policies, but I also say, I was given an opportunity to serve this country, to serve the president of the United States. I take that seriously. And why would I go out and betray his trust? There were plenty of conversations that we had where I gave him my advice, to your point earlier. He definitely listens. He takes advice. He may not take it all the time, but he welcomes it. And I would never betray his trust. The number of people that got to serve in the White House and senior administration officials who came into the White House understanding what his agenda was. I mean, he was very clear on the campaign trail. Here's what I want to do. Here's how I'm going to do it. You came into that administration because he gave you a job, and then to turn around and to write books, to become part of movements, to go on television and become a contributor and trash him. The level of disloyalty is unbelievable. And I hope that he really thinks about the people that get brought back in, because to me, he gave me an opportunity that I can never repay in terms of that honor to serve the country at that level. I can't imagine turning around and then betraying that trust. And I just, you've been in the same mold. You have never, you know, to your point, flipped on them. They made it very painful, very expensive. But there's something to loyalty that I think is important. It's not blind loyalty. It's not like he ever committed a crime in my presence and I didn't report it. It's he had conversations. Sometimes they were interesting, but you have to be able to trust the people who are advising you.
Well, Sean, in all honesty, this is one of the reasons I have great respect for you and one of the reasons why I wanted to be on your show. Look, Donald Trump is not perfect. We acknowledge that. Every human being is flawed. There's only one who is perfect. Nobody is perfect. But he gave you, as he did me, a great opportunity. You had the premier communications job in the federal government, and you did it exceedingly well. And you kept your private conversations private, and you remained loyal to him. It's the people who are now dining out on him, making a fortune, writing books, trashing him, the First Lady, who is one of the most gracious, kindest, most cultured, decent women you will ever meet in your life. I've known her since 1999, I believe it is. It is really extraordinary to see all these people dining out on trashing Donald Trump when it was Donald Trump who gave them an opportunity to serve in some of the highest positions in American government. It's very hard to understand those people. I have nothing but disdain for them.
In a time of emergency or crisis, are you going to be ready? I know I am, because I have a Patriot Power Generator 2000X in my house. That means when crisis hits, I can power everything from a refrigerator to tablets to medical devices to make sure that me and my family and my loved ones are taken care of. And if you go to 4patriots.com/Spicer, you can be ready too. As I said, you can power your refrigerator. You can bring the Patriot Power Generator 2000X into your house. No dangerous fumes, no noise. The beautiful thing about it is that it's powered off solar panels that come free with it. You just put the solar panels out, the sun regenerates the Patriot Power Generator 2000X, and there you go. No gas to bring in, no fumes to deal with. The Patriot Power Generator takes care of you and all of your needs. So if you're out of power for hours, days, weeks, even months, you and your family will be protected during a time of crisis. Don't wait for that time to happen. Get ahead of the curve like I did. Get a Patriot Power Generator and the free solar panel that comes with it by going to 4patriots.com/Spicer so that you will be ready to take care of you and your family when a crisis occurs. So let's get back to the campaign, because speaking of someone who needs to be loyal is whomever he chooses as his vice president. There's a lot of people who want to play identity politics. I understand that. He needs to choose a woman. He needs to choose someone of color, because this is what we're going to do. You've been involved in, you know, whether it's Nixon or Reagan, Dole, Bush, Kemp. So you've seen this process up close several times. If he asks your opinion, and I'm not just talking qualities, who are the types, you know, the names of people that would serve him well as vice president?
Well, let me say a couple things. President Nixon once told me that in trying to select a running mate, don't look for somebody who can help you. Just choose somebody who doesn't hurt you. I think there's a couple criteria. First of all, you need somebody who absolutely has the depth of experience, the judgment, the temperament, the track record to actually be able to run the country if, God forbid, for some reason, Donald Trump could not finish his term. That is first and foremost. Secondarily, the days of ticket balancing are over. You need somebody who shares the president's vision. You need somebody who's a non-interventionist in terms of our foreign policy, not an isolationist, but a non-interventionist, someone who is committed to peace, somebody who will protect the right to life, somebody who will protect Second Amendment rights, somebody who worked very hard to close our border and who's committed to, yes, deporting the millions of illegals here, causing a great danger to our nation. So you need somebody who's committed to the America First agenda. Then and only then should I think you look at the political considerations. Now, I think things have changed. This used to be done geographically. So Tom Dewey was the Republican governor of New York, and he chose the Republican governor of California for geographic balance. That's no longer important. We're, because of the mass-based communications of the internet, everybody is everyone else's neighbor. You need somebody that also, and you will particularly appreciate this, who is sure-footed. Someone who's not going to make a mistake their very second day on the campaign trail. Someone who's not going to be contradicting their running mate on the other end of the country. Somebody who understands the job of a vice presidential candidate is a supporting role. It is not a leading role. So you need somebody who has that kind of experience. Now, that would indicate that you need somebody who's run for president before. Dr. Ben Carson meets that criteria. Vivek Ramaswamy meets that criteria. Tulsi Gabbard, an independent, who I find very interesting, meets that criteria. It's not the same. Running for governor of a small Midwestern state is not the same as running for president of the United States, or in this case, vice president of the United States. Now, if you can find somebody who brings you a new constituency, and helps you reach voters you don't already have, well, that's the toughest part. But if it can be done, I think in this case, it's crucial. In all of these polls, you see that Donald Trump is leading, but he's always just slightly below 50%. And the electorate is very tight. There are very, very few Americans who don't have an opinion of both Donald Trump and Joe Biden. So the pool of undecideds is very small. The obvious place to make inroads are among African Americans, among Hispanic Americans, and most importantly, among women. Now, I think the candidate who's going to get you the most African Americans and the most Hispanic Americans turns out to be Donald J. Trump himself. And it's an economic message. It's an opportunity-based message. Just compare how things were. What was the black unemployment rate under Trump? I mean,
right. And remember the saying that, what have you got to lose?
Right. Exactly. And he gave us criminal justice reform, which, in all honesty, I had wished that his 2020 campaign had talked more about, because it is among his greatest achievements. It was Joe Biden, by the way, who wrote the law that gave us the harsh mandatory penalties for the first time nonviolent crime of possession of small amounts of drugs that has been used disproportionately on people of color. These people belong in drug treatment programs, not in incarceration. They're not a danger to anyone else other than perhaps themselves. So I think you then have to look at the voter group where we've had the most difficulty, where we haven't made the necessary gains, and that is women. So I guess all things being equal, I would choose a qualified woman running mate. Beyond that, I'm not endorsing any candidate. I'm for whoever Donald Trump is for. My advice to him will remain private. I've talked about they're all acceptable to me by and large. People lose sight of the fact that the 12th Amendment of the Constitution does not allow you to have a candidate who's a legal resident of the same state.
Same state.
So it takes people I like Byron Donalds.
Byron Donalds.
Very good man. Very good man. A future governor, a future senator, maybe a future president. Who knows? But you can't have two Floridians. No, Donald Trump is not going to change his legal residence back to New York. God knows.
I've said the same thing. You think he's going back to the land of Tish James and Alvin Bragg? No way.
No way.
I will tell you that I've realized, because I've heard all the arguments from the pundits about he needs a woman, he needs this. What I've realized, it goes back to what you and I talked about a minute ago. He needs someone that can be loyal to him, that gets back to the point you made at the beginning of this, which is he needs someone that says, okay, if something goes wrong, can this guy carry out the agenda so that the America First agenda goes forward effectively and can step in and be president day one? It's not just the qualifications that they can hold the office. Will they effectively be a good steward of the America First agenda going forward? I think watching him interact with Pence, knowing that up until the very end, you know, Pence had his back and he needs somebody that's not going to try to be a show horse, get out in front of him. I want you to do something weird for me right now. If you had to, you were forced to put a strategy together with the Biden campaign. They come to you and say, Roger, by law, you're forced to do the following. We've got this issue with Joe Biden. He's physically frail. He's got some mental acuity issues. The policy, like, what would you tell him? Because I get a kick out of all these Biden guys that say, we just need to get him out there more. And I'm like, get him out where? The guy, I mean, unless you wheel him out somewhere, he can't speak, he can't walk. What would you recommend they do? Because they seem to have a catch-22. They know what they want to do, they just can't do it.
Yeah, I keep seeing them saying, well, we need to reboot our campaign. I'm sorry, but you cannot reboot dementia. Their candidate is mentally deteriorating before our very eyes. I actually feel sorry for him. I really do. I think it's elder abuse. But I also think he's a very stubborn, difficult guy. If you watch that very angry press conference he had when his own Justice Department issued a report saying that he was slipping mentally, when he says, I'm the most qualified person in the country to be president, he actually believes that.
Mr. President, in December, you told me that you believe there are many other Democrats who could defeat Donald Trump. So why does it have to be you now? What is your answer to that question?
Because I'm the most qualified person in this country to be president of the United States and finish the job I started.
Who else could do what I've done? Indeed, my friend, who else could do what you have done? Destroy one of the greatest economies. Trump built the most robust economy in American history, was forced because of COVID-19 to destroy his greatest single accomplishment, and still brought the economy roaring back in time for the election. So if I were them, in all honesty, first of all, they have to avoid debates. We both know if Joe Biden's the nominee, he cannot go toe-to-toe. So they'll try to use the minor party candidates as an excuse. They'll try to say, they'll either say, we're not debating unless the other candidates are in, or looking at their polling, they'll say, we're not debating unless the other candidates are out. So they'll try to use the minor party candidates, and it remains to be seen, for example, if Robert Kennedy gets on the ballot. We don't know that yet. We really don't. I mean, it's possible, but it's not a definite. I think they will try to use that gambit. But I don't think they can realistically get through a presidential campaign with no debates. And of course, if you're Donald Trump, you want four debates, if not
100.
And Joe, if you can't handle it, if you're not up to it, send Kamala. I'll be happy to take her on. I mean, it's a step down, but they won't do that.
Do you think
either
he's going to be the nominee? Do you buy into the theories, the hypotheticals that he doesn't end up being the nominee?
I think he will not be the nominee. I've been saying it for about 2 years.
Who will?
I have a theory that they prevail upon Michelle Obama to run. A lot of people disagree with me. That's fine. But I think they'll take it right up to the convention. Biden will compile the necessary number of delegates to be nominated. And then for reasons of health, just before the convention, he'll release his delegates and the convention will draft Michelle Obama. I'm not saying she's going to run. I'm going to say she's going to be prevailed upon to run.
By the way, when her office the other day said she has no intention of running, this is the out that you just talked about. She's not running, but if she were drafted, I mean, that's, they gave themselves some wiggle room in that statement. And I think most reporters and most folks didn't see the sleight of hand here. I've got two more things I want to ask you because I know our time is tight. There's an invitation that I saw for an event coming up at Mar-a-Lago, Catholics for Trump. You're one of the hosts. How important is faith for you, and how important should it be in this election?
There's been a lot of criticism of that. Look,
I don't forget the event. What I want to know is how important is faith to you in a political world where we go at each other? We're in Lent. I was reading, I do a daily reading every day. And last night, the gospel was all about forgiveness. And I kept thinking to myself, gosh, it's so weird to be talking about that in the context of politics where you're going at somebody. It's not that you're not forgiving them. It's that you have a job. You want to beat them. So again, forget the event. What I'm trying to get is, for you personally, how important is faith in this weird world that we live in?
I never thought I would say this, but it is everything to me. Look, had I not been redeemed in the blood of the cross, if I had not renewed my faith in Jesus Christ, if I had not returned to the church, if I had not tried to live a much better life, if I had not confessed my sins, I wouldn't even be here to talk to you. Now, I get mocked constantly by the folks at the New York Times and MSNBC who say that's a feint, that's a head fake, that's another Roger Stone dirty trick. I don't really care what they think. You know what I care, Sean?
Good for you.
I care what he thinks. You can't play games with God. So no. I'm a different person than I used to be. I have a good friend in Canada. I've asked him every day to send me a biblical recommendation, just a section, a proverb or a psalm or a section of the Bible to read that I would find meaningful. And I do it every single day. And I'm praying, frankly, for the safety of President Donald Trump and his family. And I'm praying for our country, because I think our country is imperiled as never before. I spoke at a church in Pittsburgh for Pastor J.D. Shuttlesworth a week ago. It was a great event. I speak at a lot of churches because I want people to know that if God can save a hard-boiled political operative like me, who lived a pretty wild lifestyle at one time, if you can change your life, if the God can touch your life, then he can do anything. I'm only here through the grace of Jesus Christ and my faith in God.
Well, I think you're right. Don't let anyone else, as long as you're good with him, that's all that matters. I believe I get a kick out of things that people say all the time about my faith. I get it. You got to remember that's the priority. That's the important, that's the North Star. So you've got it set right. And I'm glad to hear that. The last thing I want to ask you about, you're widely known for all of your political background and strategy, but you're also known for an amazing sense of style and fashion. Just in the last minute, where did you get this? Where did you become, you're always dressed so well to the nines. Is this something that brought into your world, or did you just say, I want to be that guy. This is who I want to look like every day.
I think that it's a crucial way in which you present yourself to the world. In other words, how you look is not only how you feel about yourself, but it's how you present yourself to other people. You may not remember this, but every New Year's Day for the last 15 years, I have produced an international best and worst dressed.
I watch it though. And you're very bipartisan. I mean, like, it's amazing. That's where you take the partisanship out and you call balls and strikes. And I think it's fascinating.
Yeah. Look, I can't deny the fact that Joe Biden has excellent taste in neckwear. He wears great neckties. I don't like him or his politics, but I will concede you that he's a good dresser. So I can't tell you where this flair came from. But I believe very deeply that if you look good, you feel good. And if you feel good, you will do your best. And I'm going to continue. It's been 15 years. I've done the list. It used to be done by a man named Mr. Blackwell, who was a famous syndicated columnist. I remember reading that he had passed away. And I didn't want to see this tradition disappear. So I picked up the ball. The only year I didn't produce it, Sean, was when a federal judge gagged me and I wasn't allowed to have an opinion on anything. Never mind clothing.
Well, you know, he definitely didn't make the list that year then. But it's amazing. I do love it. And I always thought to myself, thank God that I didn't stay in the White House long enough because I got made fun of for so many things. But I realized it then when I never put that much thought into what I was wearing until I started getting whacked for the New York Times. This suit didn't look like, I never had the money. And now I realize exactly what you're saying. It's important to look a certain, to take pride in what you wear. Anyway, Roger, thank you for being here. I really appreciate it. It's such an insightful conversation. And I think it's great that people get to hear it right from you, what happened to you and the consequences of all this and how you've come out of it, because I think it's a great story. So thank you for sharing it with us. Just a reminder to all of you, thanks for subscribing. I hope you have a great weekend. A lot to get to next weekend. Please continue to subscribe, YouTube, Rumble. We'll have some more live shows coming up for you. So hit that notification button, subscribe. Have a great weekend. We'll see you back here on Monday.